And good morning, everybody. Bill Handel here on a Saturday morning as we start the legal show. And it's going to be a hot one today. Good God, it's going to be hot. It's not a schwitz, but it's going to be hot. Like, what I mean hot, 115 degrees, 116 degrees, I understand.
Near 120 in the low desert.
Jeez Louise. That's Palm Springs.
Yes. I've never been there, but I want to go when it's 120.
A lot of elderly homosexuals with small white dogs. Believe me, there are. It's
nothing wrong with that.
It's quite the. Oh, I'm, some of my best friends are elderly homosexual with white dogs.
It's too early, Bill. Hey, Bill, who did you piss off to have to work today? Can I say that word on the radio?
Yeah.
Okay, who did you upset? I looked across the window here. I said, is that Bill in the flesh?
No, you know, it's in the mornings is when I really start going crazy, Monday through Friday. But, you know, Saturday is relaxed. It's easy. I basically only have you to talk about. I only have legal questions, legal stories.
All right.
And it's almost a vacation for me to do Handle on the Law. And it's fun, and I get to abuse people because it's one-on-one. I don't get a chance to do that during the course of the show. Now, talk radio used to be call-ins, and it didn't take very long to figure out that people who need advice, although a lot of them are idiots and cretins, but people call into talk shows, I mean, genuinely are idiots. But it's the only way in many ways to have yourself heard, especially before the internet. You could take a bullhorn on the corner and be a nutcase, and you couldn't write a letter to the editor. Talk radio was it, the only way you could get in. Well, so crazy people who are just completely nuts would call in. All right, anyway, that's Layla Muhammad. Good morning. And Jake sitting behind the board. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Sam, who makes his living off of perverts. Seriously. Good morning. Oh, and Morgan. Oh, I thought it was Sam. That's right, Morgan. And she just was here. Hey, Morgan.
Good morning.
Who makes her living working for iHeart and Starving. So,
that's true. And wearing crop tops.
And wearing crop tops. That's true.
Crop tops.
Not too many people wear crop tops around here. All right, guys. The phone number, 800-520-1534. Top of the line, top of the hour. Always the best time to get in, particularly the first hour of the show. As we start moving towards later on in the show, we fill up and you are going to get busy or you're going to be waiting a while. So 800-520-1534, 800-520-1534. And it runs the gamut. Sometimes I'll say, hey, we have lines open. And sometimes I'll go 2 hours and there won't be a line open. So you takes your chances. This is Handle on the Law. Marginal legal advice, where I tell you, you have absolutely no case whatsoever. Now, there is, and we're going to take political correctness now to a level that is almost incomprehensible. I mean, it's stunning. It's almost beyond credulity. That's a good word, by the way. I looked that up in the dictionary just before I came here. And we know about football teams. Not being able to use the word Indians or any derivative thereof. When I went to high school, Birmingham High here in the San Fernando Valley, it was the Birmingham Braves. And it was not, you know, a drunk Indian staggering across the football field. It was this phenomenally noble Indian that was such a, it was the Indian chief that was, you saw half his face looking sideways, the bas relief. And it was, I mean, it was kind of neat. And then the mascot was in leather and Indian headdress. It was extraordinary. I mean, it was just, there was nothing but admiration for Native Americans. They changed it without anybody asking. They changed it. They became the Birmingham Patriots. All right. So let's go ahead and talk about what's going on. It's all unisex. It's no longer men's room. It's restroom. And it's no longer stewardess, whether you're a male stewardess or a female stewardess. It doesn't matter. It's now server and it's flight attendant because it can offend the other groups. Here's one that is just amazing. All right. There is a hair salon in England. I want to, and this is just an example of just people being completely nuts. It's AJ's unisex hair salon, where I guess they only let people of unisex go in. Okay. And they ran an ad. They wanted a stylist. And the ad ran, "We want happy stylists." That's what they said, right? They wanted, I can understand that. So if you're not happy, don't bother. So the advertisement read, "This is a busy, friendly, small salon, so only happy, friendly stylists need to apply." So they have to, by law, let these job openings go with the local job center. And that's a governmental institution that informed her, "You can't run the word happy in your ad. It is discriminatory." And you go, "How is that possible?" It discriminates against unhappy people, which means if you're unhappy, you can't apply. Welcome. Welcome to the world we live in. If you don't want to be happy, you are discriminatory if you use that word. All right, Doug. Hello, Doug. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Yes, hi. How you doing?
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
Well, my question is, I'm a food truck vendor out here in the San Fernando Valley. And as you know, currently there's like 1,000 illegal sidewalk cycle carts out here, right?
Yep.
Well, I'd like to know if I have a case against the L.A. County Health Department to file a class act lawsuit with other food trucks.
For what?
For not enforcing the removal of these illegal sidewalks.
No, not really. Here's the problem is that the authorities can pretty well enforce or not enforce laws they choose to. And it's simply a question of it's difficult to remove food trucks on the corners, et cetera.
Not a food truck. I'll talk about those.
I understand. Those little rolling taco stands, hot dog stands, those things, right? Fruit stands that are on rollers, the little carts. Do I have that right?
Right, in front of like a Walgreens or Target.
And they are illegal, but no. I mean, theoretically you could, but no one's going to bother. I don't think they have bothered suing.
Well, the reason I ask is because they really enforced it on people like myself and they enforce restaurants, and they can't sell the
right. Well, restaurants are.
Have you passed by one of these places? There are like 100 people.
I know.
I could say that they're.
Here's the problem. Restaurants are easy to enforce against because there they are. They're standing, and it is ridiculously unfair to let those little trucks or the little carts do business in violation of the law.
No, but not trucks. You keep saying trucks.
I'm sorry, little carts. I get it. No, I understand. I'm just misnaming. I know what we're talking about. You don't have to keep on correcting me. I get it. I'm misnaming. Those little carts. I get it.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. 99.9% are run by Hispanics. A lot of them are run by folks that are here illegally. And politically, there is an move to stop any anti-illegal alien and or Hispanic group of people. It's all politics. So the answer is, I think technically, yes. Procedurally, no. Practically, no. And it's very unfair. And that's simply the way the ball rolls this time around. This is Handle on the Law.
If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI.
AM 640.
More stimulating talk.
In spite of all my fear, I can see it all so clear. I see it all
KFI.
So clear.
Chewing on, I have yogurt here with a granola in it. And it's a granola that sticks to your teeth. I try to time it. So I actually eat during the spots, by the way, during the spot breaks. So while you're eating, I'm eating. Okay, Bill Handel here. KFI AM 640 Live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. And It could be Labor Day today. Well, Monday it is, but in terms of phone calls, so every once in a while we have a small number, and then some you know weeks you can't even get through. So we have a couple lines open. 800-520-1534, 800-520-1534, and I think next segment, if we decide that's just one of those days, then we'll listen to Jerry Lewis. I'm fine with that. Done that before. I can just relax. Back we go. More handle on the law. Hi, Mike.
That's what I'm looking for.
Hello, Mike. You there?
Yes. Bill?
Yes.
Okay. Here's my phone.
Yeah, hold on. Mike, are you on a speakerphone?
No, I have some headphones.
Yeah, okay. Can you... You have earphones. All right. God, I hate cell phones. All right, let's see if we can get through this and understand what's going on. Go ahead, Mike. What's your question?
Okay, I'll stay in a convalescent home.
Okay.
I'm on SSI. I had some surgery done, and I'm trying to find out what they do to me. It's hard getting them to tell me what happened to me. I told them I want to get a copy of my record.
Yeah.
They were willing to do it, but they want me to pay for it.
Yeah, they do that. It's a question of they're allowed to charge for copying the records. They do that all the time. How much do they want, Mike?
That I didn't ask them.
You have to ask. You have to ask. Because they do have the right to say, will they? Now, they have a right to. Most places will not. And will not charge. And Mike, the fact they want to tell you what they did to you is kind of bizarre. So ask to see your medical records. But then, Mike, what are you going to do with your medical records? I mean, the medical records are almost impossible to read. It's all in medical terms.
I have to get somebody to read it.
All right, find out. All right, Mike, got it. Find out how much they want to charge. It could be a nominal fee, $20, $25. And if they're charging more than that, then we're talking about going to one of the nonprofits or even going to the state and talking about elder abuse. Because if they're not telling you what's wrong with you, was it surgery that you went through, Mike?
Yeah, a surgery and a procedure. And
all right, Mike, I'm losing you. You know, when this 5G business comes in, theoretically, because everybody's on cell phones now, then maybe we'll be able to understand everything. So be it. Let me take one more before we go to break. Anna. Hi, Anna.
Hi, how are you?
Yes, ma'am.
Good morning. Sir, I have a medical bill from 11-414. I have hospitalization only from the Social Security, and the people send the bill late to the Social Security, and the Social Security people refuse to pay. So the hospital turned around and took me to collect. First, they tried to collect from me, and then I don't have to pay that, so they turned around and took me to collections, and there's where I'm standing right now on collections.
Uh-huh.
At the time was $7,155.05, and now it's over going to $9,000.
Yeah, and then by next year it'll be $90,000, and then the year after that it'll be $900,000 because that's the way they charge
and higher
interest.
And higher, yes.
Yeah, that's the way they charge. But your defense is that they failed to charge Social Security. It's their negligence.
I did.
Okay.
And I wrote them a letter.
Okay. They don't care. They don't care. So you sit back and decide whether they're going to sue you or not. And if they sue you, they sue you. And you defend it. And just say,
they also have a bankruptcy. And they forgave a lot of people, but they refused to forgive me.
Wait a minute, man. You have a bankruptcy. You went bankrupt, correct?
No, not me. Them.
It doesn't
them.
Matter.
And I
that
have a
matter.
Copy of
doesn't
the
matter.
Bankruptcy.
Doesn't
letter.
Matter. Doesn't matter. The assets are still there. It's still an asset for them, and it's still a liability.
I see.
Yeah, no, that doesn't matter. You still theoretically owe the money. Tell the collection agency, sue me. Go ahead and sue me. Here's my defense. you are negligence because you didn't bill Social Security because you were late. And see what a judge has to say. So just defend it.
I told them that.
Defend it when they sue you. One more time. Repeat after me. When they sue you, that's your defense. And until then, you tell them to go pound sand. And if they ruin your credit, then you go after them for doing that.
Okay.
There you go. God, I hate that. Collection agencies and companies and medical providers who do that. This is Handle. Let me tell you about Norton before we bail out of here. You lock your doors, you lock your windows, you lock your car. But in today's connected world, what don't you lock? Your personal information, which is more exposed than ever. And cyber criminals hack into public Wi-Fi connections, steal your info, or use malware to just ruin your life. And let me tell you about Norton 360. This is protection, real-time protection against existing and emerging threats that put your personal information at risk. And bank-grade encryption helps you keep your information, logins, passwords, certainly more private. A password manager that secures, creates, stores, manages your passwords, credit cards, etc. Now, no one can prevent all cybercrime, but Norton 360, this is a powerful ally for your cyber safety. 50% off your first year with an annual subscription. Visit Norton.com/handle, Norton.com/handle. And now this is Handle on the Law. Like that song. I don't know why, but I do. Bill Handel here on a Saturday morning. The Legal Show, 800-520-1534. Welcome back to Handel on the Law, Marginal Legal Advice, where I tell you, you have absolutely no case whatsoever. Tom! Hello, Tom! Welcome to Handel on the Law.
Howdy.
Yes.
My brother-in-law passed away recently. He had no will or trust. He has a small estate, and I understand California law allows you to handle that outside of probate.
Yeah, it's called a summary probate, and it's just procedural. You file the paperwork, and it's done.
Yeah. I didn't file anything with the court, but you can, with the successors to the estate, get it established that I would administer the estate.
Okay.
So I've been doing that, paying off some of his, filing his taxes, paying his taxes, and things like that. But now I've run out of money, and all the creditors are still coming after me.
Right.
I wonder, how do I end it?
You end it by, these are the magic words. The estate is out of money. That's it. And you say, go ahead and sue the estate. And by the way, no one will even answer. So you're going to get a judgment. You're going to get a default judgment, and you get to go after an estate that's broke. And why don't you get in line? Because the first person is the first creditor won't get any money because the estate is broke. The second creditor is not going to get any money because the estate is broke. And guess what happens to the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth creditor? You're not responsible at all. And just tell people no money. As a matter of fact, what's really kind of fun is if phone calls, you just say no money and you hang up. But if you start getting letters, and this is what they do hard mail letters, and you can tell if it's a creditor, it's kind of easy to say, you don't even open the envelope. What you do in a big, you know, with a big Sharpie is write dead across the envelope and then no and then the money sign. Okay, that's all you do. You're not responsible. Yeah. And then creditors say, but you owe the money. No. That's a crock. You don't owe. But creditors, now legitimate creditors, and there are plenty out there, will say, oh, okay, and then drop it. But there are people that try to go after you and say you owe it and the law's changed and all that. Don't believe it. Mike. Hello, Mike. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Yeah, Bill, I live in an assisted living facility, And our contract has what I call an illegal escape clause. It says that they have the right, if they give us 60 days notice, to make any unilateral change in a contract. And I say that's horse pocky.
Okay, well, how long is the contract, Mike? What does it end? How long is the contract for?
No end date.
So you don't have a contract?
It says that, you know, you can terminate it with 30 days notice.
Okay, so that's basically what they're doing. And they can say they have a right to unilaterally change it. And at the end of 30 days, because there's the contract. That's not illegal.
If we have the contract says that they're supposed to provide 3 meals a day.
Yeah.
And they decide we're going to provide only 1 meal a day.
Not if the contract.
60 day notice.
Yeah, but you don't have a contract anymore. You have a month to month, and they're allowed to do that. And what you can do, your choice is to get out of there. But they can say 1 meal a day instead of 3 at the end of the 30 days. As long as they give you notice, we're changing the process because it's not a forever relationship. They're allowed to do it, Mike. That's the problem.
Okay.
Now there aren't too many people that serve 1 meal a day. That never happens. But they do change for sure. Hi, Lauren.
Hi. Good morning. We have I guess it's called a beneficiary of a trust.
Yes,
and the trust is. The person died, so now it's going to be distributed, and it's substantial. I'm not going to say the amounts, but I understand there's $11.5 million exemption. Now, that exemption, does it go against the total of the trust?
No, it's per person, I think, that you're allowed to leave. And the exemption is for taxes, inheritance taxes that are owed. That's the exemption.
Correct.
So my understanding is... that there are no estate taxes if it's distributed. But you're talking about two people allowed to, I don't know the specific figures, but I think it's per person. So at this point, very, very few trusts are going to pay taxes. You can look it up.
Well,
I mean, that's easy.
I attempted to, and I couldn't figure it out, and that's why I was calling. Because
I know, but
it's convoluted.
Oh, really?
Side,
a law is convoluted? Yeah, I didn't know that. It doesn't use simple English. And this is an IRS exemption, is what it is. It has nothing to do with the trust. And what a shocker! And that's my understanding. I'm not a tax lawyer. I'm not a tax provider. It's a good idea to talk to your tax guy. Does anybody do their own taxes anymore? Incidentally, I don't know if anybody does their own taxes.
I haven't done my own taxes in forever.
Yeah, yeah. Just ask your tax person, because I can't say tax guy anymore because that offends the women. You can't say tax. You can't even say gal, can you? You can say guy, but you can't say gal. I guess when you use gal, you've got to put on a cowboy hat and scream Yahoo. This is Handle on the Law.
If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI, AM 640.
And good morning. Bill Handle here. As we finish our first hour, phone numbers. You know, today, I'm sure it's because of Memorial Day weekend. 800-520-1534, 800-520-1534.
Labor, Bill, Labor Day.
Oh, is that it? Oh, that's right. It is Labor Day.
You know what? But in your defense, listen, everything's running together. It could very well be May still.
Yeah, it pretty well
May. It feels like May.
All right, so guys, are you ready to do it? Okay, Jake?
When you walk through a storm, hold your head.
And the segment's over in about 8 minutes, so feel free to listen.
Be afraid.
Somebody please call.
Dark.
I'll tell you what. Let's do this.
At the end.
Can we bring down that as background music? I'll take the one phone call or a couple of them, and then as soon as I finish, we bring up the sound. The bed, if you will. What? That's part of it? I've never actually gone that far. Okay. Welcome back to Handle on the Law. And if you notice his background, Jerry Lewis singing If You'll Never Walk Alone, my favorite song in the world. Hello, Max. Hello, Max. You're up. Welcome to Handle on the Law. Yes.
Yes. You hear me? I got a bad connection.
No, I think I can hear you now. All right. Let's go for it.
I got a bad in my... got a bunch of coins and silver and gold and stuff. And my sister's a signer on his checking and all that stuff, the bank stuff. But he doesn't have a will. And he wants everything to go between the three of us.
With no will. And he's completely dead, yeah, right? I didn't get that.
He's not dead yet.
Oh, then tell him to sign a will. Tell him to write a will.
What's that?
Tell him to write a will.
I tried to. But I've asked him a dozen times.
Okay.
He needs to get it in writing.
All right, then he does
it.
Here's what you can do. How many of you are there?
Three.
That are beneficiaries. Are there any other siblings?
Yes. No, the three of us.
And there's no wife or former wife around?
No spouse, no.
So it's just the three of you. Okay. And your sister is a signatory to all of the bank accounts, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And the safe deposit boxes.
Well,
those are what I'm worried about.
Are you worried about your sister screwing you out of money?
Yes.
Aha! Then you go in.
Can I go to the bank?
No. What you can? Well, here.
Away.
Yeah, you can't. You can't. As soon as he is dead, you can open up a testamentary probate and just walk into court and ask for all accounts to be frozen. But nothing stops your sister from cleaning out the accounts. That's the problem. I mean, we're talking about stealing the money, literally stealing it, because it belongs to your dad. You know what I would do is I would get you want to talk to a trust and estate lawyer. How much money are we talking about? Is this substantial?
Okay. It's about 50 years worth of collecting coins, rare coins.
Okay, so it's real money. All right. So I would go
silver
to
silver and yeah.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
I would go to a trust and estate lawyer because I think based on what is going on, you can ask for everything to be frozen and that the court take over. So a court order, I believe you can do this. So anything that goes beyond that, stopping the sister from cleaning out the account. Now, I don't know if you can do this. I'm guessing you can. And especially in this day and age, will even take the time. I don't know. This is why you have to go to a trust and estate lawyer. Go to handleonthelaw.com and just talk to one of the trust and estate lawyers. It's an interesting dilemma, to say the least. And I'm sure it's been done before, but as you know, I don't practice trust and estate law, although I do play one on radio. Steve.
Bill, happy Labor Day weekend.
Yes.
I've owned a 1965 Fiat convertible for 10 years. It's worth about $20,000 in perfect condition, considering the year it is. I've kept it garaged with the top down, and as most people advise me to start the engine and let it warm up for 5 minutes, when I start it and drive it once a week, I do not open the door and sit in the car and start the engine. I normally have the gear. It's a manual transmission. I keep it in neutral, but I keep the parking brake on. I walk into the garage, I start the car, let it warm for 5 minutes, and then drive. I've been going to my mechanic for the past 5 years, once or twice a year for the general service. No problems whatsoever. However, this most recent time, when the mechanic did the thing and I paid him and he said, go get your car, the parking brake was not on and the car was in gear. Rather than going to the mechanic, sitting in the car and starting the car, I started the car from standing outside. It was in gear. It started up and drove 50 feet into a chain link fence.
Okay.
The damage is $5,000 which I have paid for, I went to the mechanic and I said, hey, you know, you're responsible.
Right. And he said no.
He said no because
right.
I started the car when
right.
I wasn't in the car.
No. That's incidental. No, that's incidental to the process. You starting the car because you relied on the fact that a neutral and the brake was on, et cetera. And so you're right. He is responsible. However, he's going to lie about it. He's going to lie. He's going to say, nope, I don't know what happened. You're the one that dealt with this. So it's a small claims issue. That's all. Steve, you go to small claims court, you make the argument, and you deal with it. Now, do you have insurance on the car?
Yes, I have insurance on the car, and I did not claim it.
Okay, because you're afraid that you're going to get dinged, right?
No, exactly.
Okay.
Correct, and my rates are going to go sky.
Yeah, well, they correct. Normally don't, at least on the first one they don't. But it's one of those where it's just a straight small claims case. You tell your story, he's going to deny it because they actually, instead of calling it small claims, they should call it liar's court because everybody lies. Matter of fact, it's all, if a judge gets the truth, he or she is absolutely stunned. So just tell your story in small claims. It's just not complicated. Phone numbers. Actually, we're starting to fill up a little bit. 800-520-1534. If you have a legal question, 800-520-1534. This is Handle on the Law. And good morning, everybody. Bill Handel here on a Saturday morning as we continue with the show. And oh, finally, we have people starting to call in. Good for you. Let's, I don't have to give out phone numbers, but I will. 800-520-1534. You see, there you go. Love it. Now I'm in charge, just to let you know. 800-520-1534. This is Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice, where I tell you, you have absolutely no case. There is a lawsuit here in California, and this one is a beaut. Now, it has to do with sexual assault and prison guards, California correctional officers. And so you would think clearly it's inmates suing the correctional officers or generally female inmates suing male superiors. That's your typical sexual assault, sexual misconduct lawsuit. No, not this one. This one is a beaut. This lawsuit by a group of former California correctional officers alleges that they were forced to take unnecessary rectal exams that amounted to sexual assault. This is according to the Sacramento Bee. The capital of California is Sacramento, and the Bee is the newspaper that is local up there and on top of everything that happens in Sacramento. And so the Bee is saying several workers said that they were, when they were recruits, they were told they couldn't proceed to training unless they received invasive rectal exam, including a woman who said it was a prostate exam. And for obviously the examiner didn't quite understand physiology. Women do not have prostates. And just as a matter of record, guys, when you go into the doctor and the doctor for a physical, whatever, and the doctor says, assume the position, they no longer even have to do that. I went to my doctor, started about 2 years ago, where I, all right, it's time. Okay, here we go. And I started to pull my pants down. And he said, no, we don't do that anymore because research has shown that it really doesn't do anything one way or the other in terms of mortality rates. And I said, really? He goes, yeah. I go, oh, come on. You know, just for old time's sake, would you? And then I said, I have a coupon book and I'm not quite finished with my coupons. In any case, the this one is, if this is true, this one is a beaut. Unnecessary rectal exams. Wow. And if it's true, and it seems pretty outrageous, but in this day and age, what isn't? It's going to be one hell of a lawsuit, to say the least. All right. Phone calls. Let's do it. Jason, let's begin with you. Welcome to Handle on the Law. Hi, Jason.
Yes. Good morning, Bill.
Yes, sir.
I have a question. I'm suing two former landlords for intentional infliction of emotional distress and defamation of character. And these litigants have become evasive and claim to have not been served with their legal documents.
Whoa, you're dropping out. You're Jason. Now the phone line is collapsing, okay? I got intentional infliction of emotional distress and defamation. And the claims have become what?
The litigants have become evasive. Served, but they're claiming they're not served, and they filed a motion to quash. So I'm trying to have them served again at their workplace. And now their workplace has begun to target me and claiming that my coordination of a service of legal documents is harassment, which I don't believe is true. And I was just curious what you thought about that.
You serve them out of work. That's what you do. You just serve them out of work. Where they're not, you don't serve them at their place of work. You hire someone and just follow them. And that's what happens. You don't go to the marshals to do the service. What I would do is go to a private investigator. There are people who specialize in serving folks who are evading service. Defamation, I have no idea. Where's the defamation here?
Well, basically, the landlord is one of the landlords was Chicana, and was claiming I do Republican political work, and they discovered.
So hitting you on your political beliefs?
Well, no. She said I wasn't welcome to rent there anymore because I didn't have the right.
That's not defamation. That's not defamation. And so that one's gone. Now the intentional infliction of emotional distress.
Based on race.
That's still not defamation. That's not defamation. It's the race issue is being a protected class and it has nothing to do. This is not all you can theoretically argue is discrimination, and there is none. And defamation is off the table. We're having a hard time understanding which is which. Now, where's the intentional infliction of emotional distress?
Basically, this landlord told me I was unwelcome, and only my domestic partner, who was Chicana, was welcome, and a female for some reason, and abruptly, wanted to end the rental agreement when we hadn't completed.
Okay, you can stop right there. You've got no place to go either. There's no intentional infliction of emotional distress. There's no defamation. Now, as far as not serving on that motion to quash, did you have the process server at the hearing? There was a motion to quash, and then there's a hearing if you oppose it. And did you have the process server brought up in front of the judge and say, here is the service, and this is when I serve the person?
Yeah, I didn't know I could do it.
You know what? Unfortunately, this phone line is not working. It's a good it's an interesting case, but no, it's just, I hate those phone calls. I mean, not the phone calls per se. I just hate, just goes crazy because of the quality of the calls. Craig, hello, Craig. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
How you doing?
Yes, Bill? Sir. What can I do for you?
Okay, I've had a friend that I knew for 40 years. He's in Los Angeles. I'm in Des Moines, Iowa. And so they sent him to Hollywood Presbyterian. Then they sent him to a nursing home in Los Angeles. Now, he's on disability like myself. He can't pay his rent, which is $1,300-some-odd. And he tried to go online, and the bank won't let him write out, they won't write out a check and mail it to him.
They won't let him ride on a joy. Wait. Does he have money in the bank?
Yeah, he gets a disability.
And they won't. And they won't let him write a check against the money he has in the bank.
He can't write it because he's in a nursing home.
But he can write it. He just has a. Does he have a? Does he have a checkbook in the nursing home?
No.
All right.
Everything's in his apartment, and he don't.
And he doesn't have anybody. And he doesn't have anybody if they can go to the apartment.
No.
He doesn't have anybody in the nursing home. Here's the key. Would you please go to the apartment so I can pay the nursing home? There's nobody there. Management will not go over to his apartment to pick up a check that he can sign, that he can pay the nursing home. Is that correct?
Right.
I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. But that makes no sense. Look at what you're saying is I can't get to my apartment, so therefore I can't pay the bill, and they won't help me go to my apartment to pay the bill, and they'd rather throw me out. Maybe they want him out. Maybe there's a contract that the payment is too low. I don't know. But then none of that makes sense. That's for sure. And he asked, and they said no. Where do you go with that? This is Handle on the Law.
If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk.
Good morning. Bill Handle here. It is a Saturday morning. More Handle on the Law. Marginal legal advice. Hi, Victoria. Welcome to Handle on the Law. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I've been a loyal customer to Wells Fargo Bank here in Los Angeles County for 26 years since coming to America. A couple of months ago, I went in. The banker I sat with, charming young man, was wearing a Black Lives Matter mask, okay? Didn't want to go behind his back and call headquarters and say, what the heck's going on? So I went to the nice lady manager and I said to her, if I was an employee of your bank, would you allow me to wear a Blue Lives Matter or a Trump mask? She said, oh, no, I wouldn't think so. I said, the gentleman over there, who I just sat with for 15 minutes, very professional. However, he's wearing a mask representing a terror organization.
Whoa. Hold on. All right, go ahead.
Guess who's been thrown out of the bank after 26 loyal years?
Okay.
I've been thrown out of the bank, have to remove everything within 30 days.
All right, so let me ask you. You accused the fellow of promoting a terrorist organization in that he was wearing a Black Lives Matter mask. So it wasn't you're not arguing that it's inappropriate for a political statement to be made. You were saying outright he's promoting a terrorist organization, correct?
I said that to the manager, yes.
Yeah, why? First of all, why do you think the Black Lives Matter movement is a terrorist organization? Just for, you know, conversation's
sake. Because of what's going on in America right now. Everything is being destroyed. Cops are being shot at. Everything that happens with the fires and the looting of businesses.
Yeah, how many businesses you think have been looted? Because you've got millions of people that are protesting. Isn't that a little bit broad saying that all the businesses are being looted and the riots all over the country? You know, for example, here in Los Angeles, we probably had 60 days of protests and maybe six businesses have gone up. Just curious as to
because they put BLM every time they burn something down. They put those words.
Got it. If I want to go in and rob a bank. Right. And I say Palestinian rights or Israeli rights. That means everybody in the country. All right. Anyway, let's go on to the legal part. They threw you out because you called BLM a terrorist organization, right?
No, because I went in a month later. I just said it very nicely, very calmly. A month, she said she'd handle it. I said, you know, if we're not allowed to wear a Trump mask or a Bruce.
Yeah, no, I understand. Mask. No, I understand that. So they ask you to leave
it's
within. So they ask you to leave within. They asked you to leave within 30 days. And so what happened at the end of 30 days?
Well, no, I went in a month later and I saw the same guy. That's when I filmed in the bank. And that's when the security. And then what happened is
there
was a lot of followers on social media.
Uh-huh.
Millions of people have seen it.
Okay,
millions of people have seen it.
What's your question?
My question, what is my recourse? Do I have any recourse?
No.
Because I'm obviously.
No.
None.
No, okay. None.
So they can throw me out of them.
Absolutely, they can throw. Absolutely, they can throw you out. They can throw you out. Where they can't throw you out is on the basis of race, religion, ethnicity. That they can throw you out. But can they throw you out for being a fruitcake Brit? Yes, they can. And congratulations. Okay. with the increase in cyber learning, and students are at home, obviously, all over the country, it's really important to keep your kids' personal information safe. All kinds of risks using mobile devices. And you want to make sure they're as secure as possible. So if when they're not and the information is out, guess what happens? Identity, they get the information, the cyber criminals, not only just your kids, you, and certain identity threats are missed when you're just monitoring your credit. So this is about LifeLock, and it's about protecting your identity. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. And the dark web is an interesting place. It's that part of the internet where they sell your information, where it's certainly illegal, but then your identity is compromised, bank accounts are compromised. Now, no one can prevent all identity theft or monitor every transaction at every business, but you can find out if your information is on the dark web, and LifeLock will give you a free dark web scan. Go to LifeLock.com/scan. You can save up to 25% your first year with the promo code HANDLE. So that free scan, LifeLock.com/scan, and use the promo code HANDLE. This is HANDLE on the Law. Welcome back to Handle on the Law. Marginal Legal Advice, where I, Bill Handel, tell you, insert name here, you have absolutely no case. Missy, you're up. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hi, thanks, Bill. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling from California. We're divorced. We've been divorced for almost 2 years. We agreed to share the dog. That's a verbal agreement. The dog was not listed as an asset or anything during the divorce proceedings. So lately he hasn't wanted to share the dog. He doesn't want to give her back, you know, when it's time for me to visit.
Yeah.
So my question is, so the dog is licensed because, of course, it was my dog originally. I have her licensed and registered to me. I also recently registered as an emotional support animal.
Okay.
Because of some things I'm going through.
Yeah.
So my question is, how do I take full possession of the dog?
Okay. It's the dog's a piece of property, for starters, legally.
Right.
It's not really a question of custody. That's a fascinating question. And you would be surprised that so many couples agree on everything other than the pets, other than the dog. And, I mean, that's actually gone into full-blown litigation where tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars being paid to lawyers just on that one issue. All right, when you said registered in your name, the license is in your name, and you've registered as an emotional support animal, you are way ahead of the game. You're going to need a court order. You're literally going to have to go to court pending the divorce, because I don't think it's based on the divorce. It's just someone is hanging on to your dog, and you want to go to court and get a restraining order or an order from the court mandating that the dog be turned over to you based on what you said. And then you got your ex saying, no, we should split. And no, you go, no, it's my dog. I mean, it's basically a typical argument you would make, except you have a better claim. Now, depending on how fair the judge is, if the judge is very Solomon-like, you know, King Solomon, the judge may very well ask you, what do you prefer, Missy, the front half or the back half of the dog? It's your choice. Mm-hmm. Okay, but it's
well,
just
I have a dog with me. I don't want to return.
Yeah, just you have the dog. You have the dog. You have the dog now with you.
Yes, I do.
Then keep the dog. Keep the dog and let your ex go after it.
Okay.
Absolutely. And you're just say, okay, take me to court. And that's just too bad. But you want to keep the dog from being dog napped by your ex also. Great question, actually. Perry. Hello, Perry. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hi, Bill. Thank you so much. I've been listening to you since 1989.
That's very scary. Don't ever admit that, please. What can I do for you?
I promise I won't.
Thank you.
My mom died June 1st of the COVID-19 virus. She was in a nursing home, and the county where I live didn't do regular testing. And she was, let's see, she was diagnosed in May 15th of this year and died on June 1st. Do I have any legal recourse?
Yeah. Well, it's difficult. The problem is if the testing was done by the county and they failed to do enough testing, you would theoretically sue the county. However, they have all kinds of defenses. We didn't have enough testing. We didn't have enough testing kits. We did that. It's hard because you have to prove negligence, and especially early days, it's hard to establish negligence. There aren't enough testing kits now, much less back then when there was an insane shortage. So I think the only way you could do it is the county went on and tested, and then the nursing home was negligent in not taking any precautions, but I don't know of any cases so far that have been adjudicated that whatever facility is guilty of transmitting the COVID virus. So I think no. I think you're out of luck on that one. That's tough. That's no fun, especially when you lose you lose a parent or a brother or a sister. Yeah, doesn't matter. Usually the elderly. That's the other thing. The stats are. That if you look at elderly people in nursing homes, assisted living facilities, that particular population is at most risk. And if you look at any one group of people, that is the largest number of people who have died, that's it right there. Rodney. Hi, Rodney. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Good morning.
Yes.
Thank you. 2016, I bought a house. Now I come to find out from the city that no permits were pulled for structure, building, remodeling, what have you. And there could be an issue as far as losing my house. Do I have recourse?
Okay, depends. It depends. The people that sold you the house, were they the ones that remodeled any part of the house, or did they inherit the house?
No. They inherited the house or bought it from his aunt.
Okay, and I understand. But did they? But they didn't do any of the remodeling, correct?
The current remodeling they did.
Okay, and is that the part that's out of code?
Yes,
okay.
Everything.
Okay, if it's out of code, is it because they didn't get permits or because it's out of code and there's a safety issue?
No permits were pulled.
Hold on. Because no permits were pulled doesn't stop them from going back later on and pulling a permit. Because if it's a technical violation of no permit, then you're not going to be able to sue them on that basis, but there is a no permit issue, and then there is a safety factor out of code. Exposed electrical cords, for example, electrical lines, gas lines that aren't properly installed, structure that was put up that doesn't have the proper structural engineering. Is any of that going on?
Yeah. As far as electrical and plumbing, I'm not sure.
You have to be specific. But you've got to know. You've got to know, you know, that switch over there is not properly installed, and this is the cost of doing it. You have to be very specific. You can't just say, you can say no permit, But that is not going to enable you to go into court and get damages. Because
right.
what are your damages if they met code?
Because what about the foundation?
Oh well, that who built the house?
The previous owner.
Okay, but I thought that you said they got it from their aunt.
Well, they got it. It was an old house.
Okay, how old? When was it built? When was the house built?
Oh, approximately 50 years ago.
Okay, so now it's when they pour it, if the foundation is falling apart, and let's say the foundation didn't meet code at that time, then you have to pull the records and see if there was an inspection done, and you could theoretically sue the builder 50 years later, right? They're all dead,
yeah.
And the statute of limitations. So what you need to do is have a home inspector come in and inspect top to bottom. And what is the cost of fixing it all up?
Well, the inspector came in and inspected, and he said everything's okay.
Well, then what are you going to do? Then what do you do?
The inspector said the building to see.
The inspector is, if the inspector says it's okay, you can't go there. So how do you know it's defective other than the permits were not pulled? How do you know those electrical lines are defective?
Well, that I don't know.
Right. So
I'm just assuming.
Oh, there you go. So you walk into court, Your Honor, I'm assuming, even though I haven't gone on the walls, that these are defective. You're going no place with that. And as far as the permit is concerned, that is a violation. And you can go in after the fact and get the permit. So you don't have much of a case. As a matter of fact, you have no case. And I'm pleased to say you have absolutely no case. This is Handle on the Law. If you're injured and need a lawyer,
go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI.
AM 640.
More stimulating talk.
KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. 800-520-1534. Let's do it. More Handle on the Law. Adele. Hi, Adele. Welcome to Handle on the Law. Hello, Adele.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am. What can I do for you?
Yes. How you doing this morning?
Go ahead.
Okay. Yes, Handle. What happened was about a month or so ago, I had purchased an AC. I had purchased a home warranty about 3 months ago. I never used it before. My AC went out on me, so I had contacted an AC guy to come to have it fixed. So he had to replace the part. So he contacted the home warranty place, and he went ahead and did the work. So I had paid out of pocket because I couldn't wait.
How much? That's easy, and they turned it down. That's typical.
Right.
How much? What did it cost?
They didn't turn it down. What they kept putting it off. Now they asked for pictures of the ace, part that was taken, but the part is gone, and I'm not going up there. They want me to go up there and take pictures of it, and I'm not going up there because I'm 70 years old and I have an underlying heart condition.
Yeah, I would have someone do that if I were you. Have someone go up and take pictures because it's not unreasonable. To do that, and if you know that it's going to be covered, now this is hindsight, if you know it's going to be covered by insurance, of course you keep the part, the defective part. And the AC repair guy, knowing that, did you mention to him that insurance is going to cover it?
I've been trying to reach him. And, yes,
No, I'm talking about when he came out.
I don't know because I'm covered for AC.
No, did you mention to the repair guy that you were going to submit or it was covered by insurance?
Yes, that's why he had to call them first, and he called them, but they never told him to take pictures.
That's a problem. Just do what they're telling you to do at this point, because if you usually, I thought you were going to say, and the insurance company said no, which is usually what I get. And then I go.
No, they keep saying pictures.
So take the. You got to play the game. You have to play the game. You have no choice. That's it. And if you don't want to take pictures, they're not going to pay. It's not that complicated. I mean, it's horrible, but yeah, that's the way it goes. Hi, Larry. Larry, welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hi, Bill. I have a question. My brother passed away a couple weeks ago, and the wife wouldn't allow the family and or the priest to the funeral. And I was wondering if she's allowed to do that based on religious matters, like to say special prayers to an Orthodox Christian.
Yeah, Larry, she's allowed to do that based on religion or no religion. That's the problem, okay. Is that the wife literally controls everything that happens during the course of a funeral. And even she can do that contradicting specific requests by the person who died. Now, usually I don't get questions like that because there aren't too many people that ignore the wishes of the deceased and cut out family members. I mean, that takes a pretty that takes a very special person to screw over family members during the course of a funeral and keep them out. Yeah. But let me ask, what was the reason she did that? Is because you guys are fundamental Christians?
No, it's because like we wanted further, you know, like an autopsy done just to find the actual cause of death.
Yeah, it's her call. It's her call. Unless you can argue that you want to get the authorities in and say there was some kind of foul play, why would you want another autopsy done, by the way, Larry?
Just because he was in the care. He was in hospice care with her son, and everybody knows that the son hated him. There's text messages, et cetera. And we went to go visit him and when he was at her home, and they just kept injecting him with morphine and, you know, just no regard to, like, letting him be conscious enough to talk to us. And
okay, you're talking – so now you're talking about the hospice facility was in cahoots with the son, and they were part of this in keeping him on morphine. Was he in pain?
According to the nurse, he wasn't. Like he was at her home. You know, you can either go to the actual facility or go home.
All right, I think you're going to have, let's say, and I don't know what damages you're going to sue for other than emotional distress. And if you can establish that the home did that, and if they exacerbated or accelerated the situation, accelerated his death. Yeah, it's pretty complicated.
That's what we think.
Yeah, you got to have proof. You have to have ironclad proof on that. Really do. You can't just say, and by the way, who is the one that administered the morphine? The son physically administered the morphine? He took the syringe and put it into the body?
Yes. There's several witnesses that found it.
Then you have to call the authorities. Then you have to call the authorities. Because now we're talking about, if that's the case, a criminal act. You're not allowed to do the injection yourself. I mean, a lot of people do under very, very circumstances where someone's about to buy. No one's going to – about to die. No one's going to bitch and moan about that. But this story is so convoluted. And it's a typical Handle on the Law story in question. See, that's what makes this show so much fun. You have people that it's all about supposition. It's all about, gee, I think, I sort of think, I believe. It could have happened. It would have happened. It shouldn't have happened. There's a lot of that. That doesn't work with the law, not even close. This is Handle on the Law. And good morning. Bill Handle here, and it is another hour to go for The Legal Show. 800-520-1534. That's the number. We have lines open, even though we have quite a few calls that are waiting. 800-520-1534. That's the number to call here until 11 o'clock, one more hour. Although I will be taking phone calls even after we're off the air. So I'll explain that to you a little bit later so everybody will get a chance to get their question answered. Phone number 800-520-1534. This is Handle on the Law, Marginal Legal Advice. Ever since Roe v. Wade was passed in 1973, the anti-abortion folks, the pro-life folks, have been attacking Roe v. Wade every way they possibly can. And we're talking about not only individuals, religious groups, fundamental evangelical groups, but state and federal legislators who are very conservative, who where this is a real moral issue. One of the things I discuss and I think about when it comes to gay rights, I think people who are anti-gay rights are out of their minds. None of your business. Oh, marriage is sacrosanct. Okay. What, your marriage is going to be ruined if a couple of guys or a couple of gals next door get married? Well, God didn't intend for, you know, men and women to have sex. How do you know? What, you have a personal conversation with God? No. But when it comes to abortion, that is a very different issue. Because that is a real moral issue. Because there are people who believe that it is murder. And even though I disagree, it is based on a moral conviction. So that one I have absolutely no problem discussing and viewing that other side. I'm pro-abortion rights, but I have no problem taking the other side very seriously and knowing it's coming from a very heartfelt, legitimate place, even though I disagree. So what you have is state legislatures who have passed laws basically making it making it impossible for a woman to actually undergo an abortion. They don't fight Roe v. Wade head on. What they do is just make it more difficult. For example, a doctor performing an abortion has to have privileges at a local hospital within 30 miles. And the only local hospital happens to be a Catholic hospital that'll never let an abortion procedure happen at that hospital. Just, you know, things that are much, much more difficult. You have to wait 24 hours. You have to have a woman has to have counseling. I mean, just throwing up these boulders, some of these rocks in front of it, just making it much more difficult. And those have been overturned for the most part, saying what it does is violate Roe v. Wade, a woman's right to an abortion. If you make it impossible for her to have an abortion, you can say, oh, we believe in abortion. We're just making it, quote, safer. And therefore, we have to have, for example, outpatient procedures have to meet the standards of a hospital. Not for any other procedure, but when it comes to abortion. So they throw those around. Now, let me tell you what's going on. And that is on the federal level continues to happen because Roe v. Wade is a fundamental constitutional issue. So if you're going to attack it, you have to do it federally for the most part. So Senator Ted Cruz, real conservative, truly believes in a pro-life position, is leading a group of 20 senators, and they sent a letter to the commissioner of the FDA, all right, and asking the FDA to take the abortion pill, the day after pill, off the market, declaring it's unsafe. That's another way, because the majority of, quote, abortions are actually done with this day after pill, and it induces abortions. And the senators want the pill declared an imminent hazard to public health. Which, incidentally, is impossible because this pill is one of the safest things you can take out there. I think it's even safer than ibuprofen, if I'm not mistaken. And and this was approved in 2000 is when the abortion pill comes out. And this letter asking the FDA to yank approval because it should never have been approved. And here is what the senator said in their letter. The possible risks of taking the pill should be taken into account, and it's highly dangerous, which it isn't, except if you look at their thinking and their philosophy. It's highly dangerous as having a devastating impact on American women and children. What's the devastating impact? On a woman's emotional state after the abortion. She's so guilty, we should never have let her have the pill. And the children. Which children? The ones that haven't been born yet. That's which children he's talking about. Needless to say, this is considered a Hail Mary attempt, and it ain't going to happen. But that's just another. You're going to see these over and over again until Roe v. Wade is overturned, which it very well may be. Oh, I got a couple here that I want to talk about, and some good ones, too. All right, Joe, here you go. Hello, Joe. Welcome.
Hi, Bill. Hey, I sold some land in Oregon, and I'm carrying the mortgage on it. And the guy, after about 5 months, I just last week, my neighbor said that my land got raided and the guy was growing marijuana there illegally. The detective called me and said that, you know, I could be criminally liable for all the cleanup of the problem, you know, because he built all these greenhouses and stuff. And then I called back a couple days later to ask him, you know, what was going on. He said, well, you thought the guy was back up there growing again and that he was going to refer this to the DA and I could be potentially liable for not trying to stop this guy from growing marijuana.
No, not real. I don't think so.
He was threatening me with this.
They threaten all the time. You don't take it too seriously. I mean, theoretically, if you know something illegal is being done, then you have to make efforts to evict him and get him off the land. Yeah. Also, I'm assuming in the note, if it's a very sophisticated, if it's a professionally written note, I'm sure, you tick back the paper, there's all kinds of limitations. Yeah. The land can't be used for illegal purposes, et cetera. So you have to read that. You theoretically could be, but there's no way in hell they're going to go forward with that.
Okay. So if I can go ahead and try and foreclose on it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you're allowed to do that, yes. You can, based on a violation of the agreement that you had with him. You have to look at the document. Other than that, I don't know what you can do. If he's paying the mortgage...
So he made the payments. Right,
all right, then then you want to ask the detective what do you want me to do? I'm just carrying the mortgage. I can't foreclose. The guy's blowing smoke.
Well, I said I would try. What if I foreclose? He goes, well, that's a civil action, you know, and this is criminal.
I don't know how are you responsible?
I'll refer it to the DA.
All right, let him refer to the DA. How are you responsible for him growing pot?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I thought the police were supposed to use this cop.
And they are. That's why they're blowing smoke. Wouldn't worry about it. This is KFI AM 640. Oh, this is Handle on the Law.
If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI AM 640.
Bill Handle here on a Saturday morning. More Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice. Tom. Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
I was driving within a speed limit, which was 55 miles an hour in Ventura, and I was making a left-hand turn on the green, and it turned to yellow, but I did get through, I thought. So yesterday I got a letter, nice letter from the police department, and it's a $495 fine.
Yeah, isn't that
they
lovely?
Beg your pardon?
Yeah, it's lovely. I'm just saying, isn't that fun? Go ahead. Yeah, they showed you what?
So they showed me the film, the photos, and I can't recognize myself. It is my car. So is there anything that says that you have to recognize the person?
Yes. You sort of have to know who's driving it. Now, the question becomes, because they're going to ask you, who is it? And what do you say? What do you say?
Well,
because that's what the judge is going to do. You plead.
I have to tell them yes.
Okay. Well, there you go. You've just admitted guilt. Unfortunately, if they have your license plate, the presumption is against you, unless clearly it is someone else. And then they're going to ask, the judge goes, who is it? And then theoretically you can say, well, you can't force me to, especially if it's your wife, you can't force me to testify against the person driving it. But it never goes that far. It's probably you, unless the car was loaned to somebody and you say, I loaned it to a friend. And then the friend isn't tagged. That's why I always wear a Groucho mask whenever I'm driving near one of those and say that's certainly not me. Not at all. Hi, Lynn.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I can do well. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I was about to answer, but I don't want to. Go ahead.
Okay. I was signed up for a clinical trial. I signed a 32-page agreement and went through all the clinical drug trials. There was no placebo. It was just a way of administering the drug one way or another. And I signed the document. I went through all the pre-screening. I was accepted. I went through all the baseline testing. It was perfect. The day before I was supposed to get the drug, I even started getting paid for the study. The day before I was supposed to receive the drug, I got a call saying, oh, sorry, the study's filled. We can't accommodate you. Goodbye. Yeah. I went, wait a second. Is this an implied contract? Do I have a case?
No, it's a written contract. There's nothing implied about it. You have a 23-page form that you filled out, and somewhere in there it says that clinical trial people have the right to not go forward with the trial with you at all probably stop it at some point. You can't. Go ahead.
The reason they gave me was the clinical trial was filled, but I go on the national website, I think it's NHM or something like that, and I've been tracking it now for 3 days. It still says recruiting, and I called the drug company, and I was told they are still recruiting. Okay. So either that's a mistake, or who cares, but that's their problem.
All
right,
so what do you want to do? You want to sue them to get back into the drug study?
Yeah. Well, I either want to sue them to get back into the drug study or get reparations.
How much is that money worth? Let's say you're in front of a jury.
The drug alone is worth $20,000.
Yeah, but
a year.
But it's being tested.
No, it's approved by the FDA. It's just two ways of administering the drug.
So it's, So you're saying it's already approved by the FDA, but it's still being tested?
Right.
How does
It's approved by the FDA for injection, so it's been going on for a while, and now they're going to test it in a patch form. So
yeah, but it's still
groups were injection.
But that's a test, and they've decided after accepting you, they said no, we don't want you, and the reason.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and then they say it's full, and now you're saying no, it's not full because they're still advertising and they want people, and the drug people. Let's say it was a mistake to accept you. Well, we made a mistake.
They started paying me. They already started paying me.
All right. I'm going to give you a lawyer. I'm going to give you the name of a lawyer. We'll probably want a $5,000 retainer to start.
Okay.
Be prepared to spend at least, I'm guessing, if you're talking about going against a pharmaceutical company on these circumstances, if I had to guess $50,000 to $100,000 in legal fees.
Okay.
You're willing to pay that.
I don't know. I just wanted to get some advice.
Your advice? So. My advice is leave it alone.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to go no place with this because there's somewhere in the language says they have the ability to just arbitrarily say no at any point. I can't imagine that they wouldn't be able to control who goes in, who doesn't go in. And it's their call 100%. And to go against them and say, no, it's not. Once you've accepted me and started paying, you must continue to give me the drug. I don't think that's going to go anyplace. I really don't. This is Handle on the Law. Beautiful people, top designer clothes, front row fashion shows. What you do and who'd you know? Welcome back to Handle on the Law, Marginal Legal Advice. Hello, Steve. Welcome to Handle on the Law. What can I do for you? Steve, you there? Steve's been waiting forever, so I can't wait for this. Steve.
I'm here.
Yes, sir. Right. Oh, there you are. All right, Steve, move forward.
I'm just wondering what the law says about these cases where people are just driving the street like normal and you turn down the wrong corner and all of a sudden you're faced with people wandering in the street and they block your car, jump on your car, and you know, you fear for your life. What are you supposed to do?
Okay, first of all, you call the police. That's for starters.
The police don't show up these
days. That's the problem. Then you're talking about, is your life in danger? Okay? If it is, then you take your gun or your crowbar or you run them over. But you had better have your life in danger. If they're jumping on the hood of your car, there ain't much to do. Even if you drive off quickly. Well, I would say if you just gun it and don't hit anybody and you're and someone flies off, you're probably in pretty good shape.
They've got that all figured out. They block your car, so you don't just drive by and wait.
Well,
that's
but
not the way it
but
is. You
but,
know
but
that.
if your life is in danger and you have to go forward, then it becomes
that's the question.
Yeah, no, it's and it's a real I got to tell you, it's a fine line because your life has to be in danger. And so
that's the question. That's why I'm at. That's what I'm.
And I'm saying,
about.
And that's the answer.
Where is that line?
I don't know. That line is what happens
you
under no. Yeah, no one knows until it happens.
Okay.
And that is,
well,
did you
the
have a
dilemma that everyone's in these
yeah,
days?
Yeah. Did you? No, that's not true. That's not true. No. Because if there's a demonstration, you don't drive anywhere near that.
Well, of course not.
That's and there's the answer. That's the
but
real
up in
answer.
Life City, I just realized somebody sent me a YouTube and it is not far away,
but you get the hell out of there.
How do you know? And it
and
it's
you don't
not near the hot zone.
Yeah, you don't until it's there. It's like Justice Potter. You don't. I can't tell you what pornography. I can't define pornography, but I know it when I see it, and that's what's going to happen. Every case is
we're
different.
Talking this real. This is real.
Okay, great. I'm going to have a huge discussion. The law is the law. If your life is in danger or someone else's life is in danger, you can use lethal force. If someone is blocking your car, you can't go forward unless you have reasonable fear that your life is in danger. For example, someone starting to pound on the window with a baseball bat or a crowbar or takes out a gun, then you're allowed to step on the gas and get the hell out of there. And if someone gets hit, great, but you bought yourself a lawsuit, no question about it. You may have bought yourself an arrest. So the answer is if there's anything close to a demonstration, just get out of there. Why would anybody drive into that? And incidentally, it's not one of those where you just turn the wrong corner. Oh, here it was. No, no, it doesn't work that way. Sarah. Hi, Sarah. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I have a very small apartment unit, and I have man and wife in the contract. They have paid the September rent, and they have a security deposit. But what I noticed was that the furniture has been moving out. They clean out the premises outside. And then I asked about the husband because I only see her. And so she told me she's moving out herself. And the husband is in a convalescent facility. And I don't know anything about them because I tried to use the phone, no communication, seeing what was happening. And for her not having given me a letter of her intentions to vacate herself, then I dropped a letter of a walkthrough of the premises. My concern is that they one time and sometimes they remove the appliances from
yeah,
the
yeah, no, that's a, okay. That is, yeah, that's a legitimate fear. So, Sarah, you, with giving them notice, a letter, I'm walking in tomorrow, 24 hours notice, then you're allowed to go in because that's considered an emergency situation. It's considered an exigent circumstances where there is a legitimate fear of appliances being removed. And you look at all the circumstances, I think you're going to be fine. The law says yes. That you are not arbitrarily allowed to go in except for certain circumstances and exigent circumstances. One, let's say there's a leak. Let's say water is pouring out of the apartment. Let's say there's an issue where you've heard gunfire or you've heard smashing of walls. Then you're allowed to go in. As a matter of fact, on a truly emergency basis, you're allowed to just walk in the door, but that very rarely happens. You're going to be okay with that 24-hour notice. You shouldn't have a problem with
it. Oh, yes,
that.
I already did. I gave him more
okay.
than plenty of
okay,
time.
So you're fine. Right, so yes, what? Yes. What? So Sarah,
it
you just...
Matter if they already,
are you asking...
It they already,
okay. Oh, God, I love this show sometimes. Edward! Hello, Edward. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hey, how's it going?
Go ahead.
During your show, so I purchased a 6-month car insurance policy. Is it legal for them to request a marriage certificate license to when excluding my wife?
Oh, that's interesting. I don't think so. I don't think it's legal because all you're doing is excluding somebody from driving your car.
That's right.
Yeah. No, I've never heard of that. I have never heard of that. Now, is it legal? Who the hell knows? I don't think it's illegal.
Okay.
I think they're just doing it.
That was the other. That was the other question I was going to ask. Was it illegal?
No, I don't think so.
Because I would sign, you know, a paper excluding any drivers over.
Yeah,
the
but here's what. Yeah, and all you do is say exclusion. But if they want that information, I go, hey, pull the record. Marriage licenses are public records. You really want to know if I'm married or not? You go to the county recorder's office. In the meantime, here's the exclusion. Yeah, it makes no sense. I've never heard of an insurance company asking for that. But sometimes it happens. Jim. Hello, Jim. Jim, you're up. Welcome to Handle on the Law. Okay. How long has it been Jim's been holding? Hopefully 2.5 hours, because I love this. And sometimes you hear, oh, wow, Jim, where have you been that you weren't near the phone?
I'm sorry, are you saying Jim or Tim?
Oh, I'm saying Jim.
Oh, well, this is Tim.
Got it. All right, you're excused because the screener misread that. All right. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, disregard those last statements. All right, let's move on.
Okay. So here's my deal. Concerning water leakage in my house, I have a condo, and my insurance company, I'll go back just a little bit. Several months ago, I had a leak and called them about it and said, you know, this is what happened. And they said, well, that's not covered because we don't fix the pipes and we don't do rerouting of the plumbing. And I said, okay, fair enough. She said, is there any other damage? And I said, no, not really. She said, well, there's nothing we would cover. And I said, okay, fair enough. Yesterday, I go to put something away in one of my cabinets and I hear a hissing sound. And so I'm listening and decide to cut out the back of the cabinet. Ended up calling the plumber and he and I cut more and more away and found the leak. Apparently, it's been there for some time because there's mold and a lot of water damage. Drywall is all wet, the whole deal. And so I called my insurance company this morning, and the first thing out of her mouth was, well, how long has it been there? I said, well, I don't know exactly, but there's some mold, so it's been there for some time. Ah, well, that is different. If there's water that's been standing for any period of time and there's mold, it sounds like that's not something we would cover.
Yeah, it never is. Incidentally,
okay, well, go ahead.
Tim, let me tell you, it's always we don't cover it. I'll tell you that right now. Whenever you deal with an insurance company, it really doesn't matter. We don't cover it. Here's the exclusion.
Right.
You lose your right leg in a car accident. We only cover left legs. It's pretty crazy out there. All right. So she says we don't cover it because it's been standing water. And then the fun part is it was in the walls and I didn't see it. So I'm supposed to tear open the walls. Is that what you're saying, insurance lady?
Exactly.
And so you submit, and if she denies it, you go ahead and you appeal it. And then if you have to, you have to sue your insurance company. I mean, it's crazy. But that's the chances you take on insurance.
My question is, Bill, how did they get away with this? And one of the things they said, did the pipe burst or was it a leak? I said, how do I know? At some point it burst,
right?
Of course.
Because they're using any excuse not to pay. And so you want to go to a supervisor. You go on up, and it used to be you could sue insurance companies for bad faith. You can't even do that anymore, and you're not going to be able to do that in small claims court anyway. How much is it going to cost to fix all of this? Do you have any idea?
Well, okay, depending on the extent of the damage. My biggest concern is the mold.
All right, yeah, mold. There's mold. They have amelioration processes for mold.
Right.
What the hell do they call that? Mold.
Mold remediation.
Mold remediation. Fair enough. Yeah, yeah. And it's so you deal with that, and you got to figure out how much it's all. I mean, you have to figure out what it's going to cost, and then you start screaming at the supervisors, and you go on up. And the other thing is, I'd go to the insurance commissioner, and if enough claims are made against this company with the insurance commissioner, because insurance is regulated in the state and in most states, give them some grief. And but that's insurance, man. It's just, I hate it. The only thing they're very good at that they never ever fail to do is accept the checks. And if you're late 15 minutes, they let you know. Yeah. But that's insurance. It's just, you know, there's no easy answer. Well, there is an answer. And here is the answer. And you have to pay for it. You get the best insurance company you can. But you pay the premiums. For example, I don't have it, but I understand Chubb is an insurance company that would never argue and just write the check. The problem is the premiums are very high. So it's a question of just doing research. And I would probably talk to an independent insurance agent, not a farmer's agent, or because they sell farmers. But I would talk to an independent insurance agent and just go through that. Which company has a reputation for paying off? Which companies have a reputation for fighting you across the board? Just do a little bit of research. People don't. This is Handle on the Law.
If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk.
And good morning. Bill Handle here as we end the show. Now, we have some lines that are open. Most lines are filled. But I want to give everybody a chance who is already waiting. I'll answer all the questions at the beginning of the Leo LaPorte show. I'll be doing it off the air. So hang on. Also, if you want to call and it's busy, just call back in 5 minutes or 10 minutes because, you know, calls end and I hang up on people, hopefully a lot. And so you'll probably get in. So if you want to call now, a couple lines are open. And if it's busy, just wait till the end of the show and I'll keep on calling or I'll keep on answering questions until we're all done. Number is 800-520-1534. 800-520-1534. Welcome back. Handle on the Law. Marginal legal advice. Hi, Bill. There you are. Hello, Bill.
Yes.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you? Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. My son is going to a school in L.A. You know which one it is. And he was in an apartment. And in March, the school shut down. He went online. He moved back home. We kept paying rent to this apartment. Big complex, big company. So we paid March, April, May. And June and July, we failed to pay because when he went to go back, his roommate had COVID and texted my son. We have a copy of that. And so, of course, now that apartment complex is, you know, threatening to turn me over to collections.
Sure.
So my idea was go along with that, offer them half the amount of rent. If they won't take that, pay the rent, and then take them to small claims for the last 2 months.
Why?
Saying it wasn't safe.
What are you going to argue?
It wasn't that it wasn't safe to return to the apartment.
Why is that their problem as opposed to the guy who gets COVID moving out? It's between the two of them. It's between your son and the roommate. It has nothing to do with the landlord. He has a lease. The landlord has a lease.
So there's no way I can get out of this lease.
I don't think so. Now, you can argue, offer them half rent. Just say, hey, you know, it's that's all you can do is negotiate. But you owe the money? Yeah, unfortunately, you owe the money. And this is why everything is up in the air. Is there going to be rent relief? At this point, no one knows. The Republicans and the Democrats are dealing with this. Are landlords going to get some relief because rent can't be paid? Right now, evictions are they're delayed. They're on moratorium, but not the money that's owed. I mean, it's pretty crazy stuff to say the lease. Leased. Also, by the way, I want to remind you again, because we're at the end of the hour, please feel free to call. I will keep on answering the questions after the show is ended. Off the air, I'll keep on answering the questions. And if it's busy, just call back in a few minutes because people, you know, we end phone calls. So the number is 800-520-1534, 800-520-1534. Hang on, and I'll get to you momentarily. Also want to remind you that with the increase in cyber learning, it's important to keep your kids' personal information safe. All kinds of risks associated with using mobile devices. And it's all about getting the bad guys getting information to steal your identity, your kid's identity. And so what do you do? Let me suggest LifeLock. What LifeLock does is detect a wide range of identity threats, far more than what you would probably figure out. For example, your Social Security number for sale on the web. If they detect your information has been compromised, they send you an alert. If your identity has truly been compromised and you get into trouble, they'll help you fix it. Now, no one can prevent all identity theft or monitor every transaction at every business. But you can find out if your information is on the dark web. That's the part of the web where bad guys sell your information. Get your free dark web scan at lifelock.com/scan. Save up to 25% off your first year with the promo code HANDLE. That's a free dark web scan, lifelock.com/handle. lifelock.com/scan. The promo code is handle, lifelock.com/scan. Promo code handle. This is Handle on the Law.